Welcome to fucking Candyland, hosted by Rampage and Gemini.
We are so excited that you're listening to us. If you want to elevate the experience and see these interviews on video, you can join either one of our Patreons. They are linked in the description wherever you're listening to this podcast episode, in addition to getting to watch the full-length video interviews. We also both have tons of additional content and support for the spiritual community. So go ahead and check those out. And then if you're ever interested in readings with us or personally connecting with us, we also have our websites and social medias linked in the description as well. Feel free to share this episode with everybody that you know. Get the Lick It Like a Lollipop name spread around, and we hope you love this episode.
Welcome back to another episode of Candyland. Tonight, it's just me and Gemini, my lovely co-host.
I'm so happy to be here. I feel like we haven't talked in a really long time, but that's a lie. We talked last week. It just had to be scrapped.
Yeah, a lot of things had to be scrapped. Well, I believe that things happen for a reason, so that episode just wasn't. It wasn't going to work.
No. And so what had happened was, without giving you guys detail, we decided to have my daughter do an episode with us, and kids are fucking reckless. And she just started talking about all kinds of information at school and things that kids do and whatever. And we were like, oh yeah, we're not airing any of this shit.
Yeah, I knew that kids these days were a lot wilder just because of the internet. Like, you know, when we were kids, we couldn't just find everything on the internet. But now, 20 years later, everything is on the internet. So not only do they know everything, they have access to everything. And it's crazy.
There's a lot of shit, too, that I feel like kids all go through different things and have different home lives and whatever. And so then you can't really gauge at what rate and speed your kids are learning things and experiencing things, because it truly doesn't matter what you're trying to limit them from at home. They're going to come into it in the world. And it's all about like talking to your kids, I feel like, and preparing them for things that are going to come up in the world, and then being able to have open discussions. And I told Brian, I loved it so much when Auntie Paige came out, and he were like, oh, you can't go there again. You're never going there. Oh, absolutely not. And I was like, see, she doesn't even have kids. She fucking knew what was up. Like, that was probably my favorite part of the whole thing.
Yeah. I, as an only child, had a lot of exposure to things through my mom's friends, and just being like in the room and being around things, and I just can't. I think I will end up being a helicopter mom, because I don't approve how these children are moving in the world. And I know my mom had strict rules for certain things but was a lot looser on other things. So to hear your daughter's experience with her biological mom and things that she had going on, it was triggering. It was triggering for me, because now I, as an adult, realize, hey, that was wrong, or your mom shouldn't have let you do that, or being exposed to that wasn't okay, or that wasn't cool. And hearing other children, her friends, things that she was learning from other kids, like all of that was triggering for me.
I'm sorry that it was a trigger. I've noticed through us talking a lot of correlations that you and my daughter just have in common about, you know, mother experiences and whatnot. And I knew that she feels like a bond with you, And I think that a part of that is just her energy knows that, like, you recognize and you see her. And I think that she doesn't always feel very seen and heard. And I think that that totally happened for her, where she felt seen and heard. Sometimes, though, when you feel seen and heard, you just be letting your mouth run fucking reckless. She was over here talking like she's one of the fucking girls. And she's like, let me tell you about this. And we're like, wait, no. I was so mad when we got off the call. She's like, are you angry? And I was like, I'm not angry at you. I'm just so mad that I can't protect you from the world and like put you inside of a bubble and curate everything that happens inside of your reality.
Yeah, and I think that the way she opened up about certain things, not knowing that they were wrong or that that shouldn't have been happening, like, oh, well, this person knew I was doing that, or this was already approved. That's what, not triggering in a bad way, I feel like triggering me in an awakening space of like, wow, as a child, I just thought all of this was okay because my guardian, my parent allowed me to do that. You know, when I was a kid, you all, I don't know why, but I must have been a really fucking cool 12-year-old because a lot of like 14 and 15-year-old girls, not boys, girls wanted to hang out with me, wanted to come to my house, wanted to go to Florida with us, to the lake with us. And I look back on it now and like those kids didn't really have a good home life. So coming to my life and coming to my house was like getting away or escaping from the poverty and the drama and the chaos, addictions and things that they dealt with at home. So yes, I'm sure they enjoyed hanging out with me, but it was more so like living vicariously through me of like, wow, Paige has Barbies and the internet and a computer and a pool and all of these things that like I wish I had, but I can have those if I just hang out with her. And so I look back on that, and my mom really, really liked that because she never had to pay a babysitter. Like, up until the point of me staying home alone, she never had to pay a babysitter at all when I was like 11 and 12 years old because everyone around me was like 14, 15, 16 years old. And I remember my neighbor, her name was Christina. She was born in like 89, and I was born in, you know, the 90s. So I just look back on that and I think, like, there's no way on God's green earth that as a teenager, I wanted to hang out with 12-year-olds ever, like, at all. So when I look back on that, I'm like, you know, that was wrong. Like, even though they wanted to hang out with me and they were not, you know, influencing me to do anything negative. They literally came to my house to be more childlike and to have more childlike experiences that where they had to grow up really fast, where they had to stay home alone. But then that gave my mom like this mental understanding of like, well, Paige is really mature, so she's allowed to do these things. She's allowed to be exposed to these things and hang out with these people. And I just look back on that and that was wrong.
I feel like when I was younger, my mom was very, it's so interesting because you mentioned the things that like your mom was super lax on, and then the things that like she really cared about and she was like, you know, had more rules and guidelines on. And it's so interesting because there's so many things that were like I had rules and regulations on. And one of them was going over to people's houses. Like my mom was always insistent on, I have to talk to the parents. I have to make sure that like they say that you're allowed to be there, whatever. And I hung out with people who I knew their parents would lie and say that we were at their house so that we could go and do whatever. So like friends that I would make in like middle school and stuff like that, I would hang out with people who were getting into things that we couldn't get into, who didn't have responsible parents at home, who were just going to let us run amok. And so people didn't necessarily like, I had friends who would come over to our house or whatever, mostly because my mom made food. But like, if you wanted to like hang out and get into shit, we're going over to your house where your parents don't give a flying fuck. And, you know, or your brother's got people that are in their 20s wanting to hang out with us and, you know, smoke us out or whatever it may be. And I also, though, like, I feel the exact same way, like with my daughter. And I'm always trying to figure out like what my balance is because You heard things that are like really lax and just like she's able to do that like you and I wouldn't let do. But when it comes to things like coloring her hair or whatever, or doing her makeup or those types of things where it's like self-expression, it's not harming anything, you're just expressing yourself. I'm so open to her doing those. And that's, where her biological mom is like, oh, that's the thing that I'm not cool with. And so co-parenting on things is just really interesting.
I actually experienced the same thing she's experiencing. My mom would not let me get my nails done, color my hair. I think she, let me get some highlights in middle school, but nothing like off the verge of my natural color. And so I completely like my mom would not let me color my hair or get my nails done, but at a very young age, she lied and said I was older so I could get my belly button pierced. And I had to hide it from my dad. So my dad did not know I had a belly ring until like well into high school. And when he found out that I had that, he came unglued. And even though I had had it for like 4 years at this point, and it was past like the stage of healing or getting infected or whatever, like he came unglued. And I remember him calling my mom. And this was kind of when my mom was going through her midlife crisis, and I had moved in with him. And me and her really weren't close anymore. It was really her ex-husband and my dad that was raising me. She was MIA. She was in other states. She was wherever. She was not active or present in my life. But if I wanted to do something or to get into something or lie about something, I would go hang out with my mom. And, I just look back on like my mom at like 15, 16 years old, just literally going to the liquor store and buying us like a fifth of UV or a fifth of vodka or a fifth of tequila and letting us drink that at her house. And like, of course, like we're young, we don't know our limits. We've never had life or death experiences with alcohol. So like everyone's just drinking and drinking. And I remember like 15, I had a party. My mom inherited a house. My uncle had passed away and we were living in this house, or she was. And it was like, he died there. So it was a little haunted. It was creepy. It wasn't like, inviting, but she was letting me and my high school friends like party there. Like she wouldn't even be there half the time, but she would tell my dad I was going to be with her for that weekend. And I remember one of my friends got so fucked up, she had to call her parents to like come get her. Like it was like, really bad. And I remember her parents were like, her mom just let you all do this at home. And she's like, her mom isn't even here. Like that, like they thought she came to my house to stay the weekend and was like going to be safe and someone was going to be home. But then like her same parents let her smoke weed at a very young age. So like, some people are like throwing stones at one parent for doing this, but then let them do something else. Like, I don't know. So it's really weird what some parents allow and some parents don't allow. Like my dad would have never, but there are so many parents that I look back that like we knew if we went there, we could smoke weed, or we knew if we went there, their mom had clonopins and we could take them, or if we went there was a liquor cabinet full of liquor. And I used to babysit for my aunt, and I remember we. After the kids went to bed, me and my friend got really drunk in their liquor cabinet. We filled it up with water, like what we drank. So I ended up getting in trouble for that like 2 years later because they were like, yeah, that really expensive vodka that we had, it was diluted with water. I wonder how that happened.
Oh my fucking God, dude. See, when you tell me the story about your belly button piercing with your dad, I wonder how much of it was like actually angry about the belly button piercing and actually angry that like there's something being kept from him that like other people are in on. Because I know that like that's something for us that's always like really frustrating is when there's like purposefully a secret that she's supposed to keep about her or about something else that like she should be saying. And it's like everything can be done as a team, but if there's going to be secrets about things, then it like creates a mistrust of not knowing like what other thing like is your safety being lied about? Is there other things like And so I wonder for your dad finding out like this, you've had this for 4 years and I haven't been in the loop. Like, what the fuck else is mine not being told about?
Oh yeah, I've never seen him as mad as he was. And there was like a stretch where, they didn't really involve the courts, but at any time my dad could have flipped the script and took her for child support. But I think that he was afraid that she wouldn't pay or follow the rules. And then me as an angsty emo teenager would have been like, you put my mom in jail. Like I wouldn't have understood the concept. But it just became like a very big choice in my eyes. Like, I have to go live with my dad, even though it's going to be stricter and hard and not fun. All this isn't fun anymore. It was like a part of me, like my spirit team, something awakened me to be like, look, we know you're not going to like this decision, but you have to willingly go make this decision. Because in the court's eyes, my mom was a fit parent. Like they never had anything on record. And back then, CPS would come to school and just like sit down with every kid. Like whether you've had any issues or not, like they would come to our school and we lived in a poverty type area and it was an independent school, not a public school. And so CPS would just come. And at this school, you could also sign a paper and they could paddle your kid if they were in trouble. Like, yeah, it was a really weird place. So, we as a school, CPS would come and just sit down and talk to people. Like, they would give classes, they would sit down and they would just ask you questions like, do your parents make you dinner? Do you go to bed hungry? Do you have clean clothes? Like just random shit. And then, kids are loudmouth, but they don't know what they're saying. Just example, like your daughter, they don't know what they're saying if it's right or if it's wrong or if it's gonna trigger something. So they're like, yeah, my mom's never home at night, or yeah, we don't have food at our house, or that kind of thing. And then it would open a CPS case. So I knew even as like a young 10-year-old, not to say like, oh yeah, some nights I go to bed and my mom's not home, or some days there's all these people at my house smoking or, doing whatever, like whatever it is.
My kid busted in. Can I go to the book fair?
Hi, please.
Out of all the times I've paid attention to things on the road, I saw a semi and it said the Scholastic Book Fair. And I was like, that's so crazy because I've never seen that semi before.
Dude, they have those all over the place. And they, so when they go and set up the book fair, they drive in the Scholastic, like big rig. And so that's probably why you saw it. They were probably going to set up at a school.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I remember the book fairs used to be so much cooler, maybe just because we were a kid, but I just felt like they had so many different like types of books, so many different stuff. And now like Matt comes home with the stuff that he got from school. And I'm just like, that's you got an eraser dispenser? What happened? Like, we used to have the fluffy pens and like the little charmed like journals that you could get that had little locks on it.
Yeah, I used to love getting those best friend journals where you like would fill them out with a friend where it'd be like, how did you all meet? What is your favorite color? What are your goals? And I have a bunch of them that are like halfway filled out, like, because I would like end up not being friends with that person or something. Like, I have a bunch of those little journals that are like halfway completed. And they would come with like all these stickers and all these little like tabs and different things. But yeah, no, $20 used to go really far at a book fair. I'd be shocked if $20 goes far these days.
No, it totally doesn't go far. Matt came home yesterday. It looks like a soda dispenser, and you push a button and it drops down a mini little soda can eraser. So there's a bunch of different flavors. That thing was $8.50 and it's like this big.
And on Temu, it was like
50 cents.
literally. That's why it's hard for me to buy little knickknacks. Like, we went on a road trip last weekend to a concert and they had little keychain Chuck shoes, but they were bedazzled, like just all the way diamond. And it was $5.99. So I was like, Juber, do you want one of these? Because, like, I'm gonna get one. So I bought her one and I got a few other things, and literally my total was like $22. And I was like, and this is why I don't go to gas stations. Like, this is why I never go inside a gas station. I buy Red Bull, buy the case. You know, if I won't want to have one, I don't need to go to a gas station because I inevitably spend 20 plus dollars every time I go.
Yeah. Nope. And I don't really buy knickknacks and shit when I'm out. And I always just find that things are like super overpriced unless I'm going somewhere that's like a monumentous place, and we'll usually like pick up a postcard from that place. And like that's our thing is, hey, we bought a postcard here. We have a picture of it. We'll add it to like a little travel book or something. But everything's always overhyped. You can go online and you can buy a fucking Michigan State sweater and not have to spend $45 on it. Because you went to Michigan.
Well, it's like, you know, buying something at an airport, whether it's candy or knickknacks or souvenirs, like it's very expensive because most people that are purchasing something at an airport have forgot it. So they're willing to pay $45 for a travel pillow when it was $12.99 at TJ Maxx. And so
True.
I don't know, I see that meme, it floats around and it's like, you know, a bottle of water can be 30 cents in a pack or all the way up to 850 at a concert or a festival. And it's like it's the same thing, but it's about the area that it's in or, you know, wherever it's being offered. And it's like never sell yourself short because of what you're being offered. Never sell yourself short because of the environment that you're in. You know, at home, water comes out of the faucet, and then at a festival, water should be free at festivals, in my opinion. Like, not just water fill-up stations, but like easily accessible to water, dollar bottle of water. You're out here selling alcohol for $6.50, $7, but a bottle of water is $8 or a Gatorade is $8. Like, no wonder people are out here seizing and having alcohol poisoning. You know, it's like so many areas of our life we're willing to pay more for something, but then when someone starts a business or someone starts doing hair or whatever, then you want them to do it at cost or for free. And that's what blows my mind with the internet is like there are apps like Wish and Temu that you can get these little knickknacks and little trinkets on for very cheap, but then you put it in a Scholastic Book Fair where there's children being involved, and all of a sudden you're going to pay $8.50 for junk that he's going to look at one time. The smell's going to wear off of those erasers and they'll end up in the floor.
Yeah, I've paid like the $9 that it costs to get a bottle of water at the airport before because they don't let you take anything in when you go in there. And so then you're in there and you're like, well, a bitch is thirsty. I have to wait 6 hours for my flight. I also recently saw this post that said, if the post says looking for blah, 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 that doesn't charge an arm and a leg, don't tag me because I don't want their business. And I reread that for a minute and I was like, no, literally, it makes me think of people who have been like, oh, what are your prices? And then been like, ah, yeah, that's really expensive. Or and then gone and booked with, you or gone and booked with somebody else. That's happened to both of us where we're just like, what do you mean?
I honestly have so many like protection things that I just don't even attract clients who are not willing to pay my price. Like, I have clients that are already picking days in May, and like, I'm not worried about someone who isn't wanting to pay for quality or isn't ready to pay for quality. Like, you know, when I did the flash reading, the amount of people who thought that was a video reading when it clearly said it was a three question email flash reading. Like the fact that so many people, not just one, like five different people thought it was a video reading just tells me a lot about like they didn't read, they just booked, they didn't look at the confirmation email. And I noticed that whenever people pay 50 plus dollars for an email reading, I never have an issue. They always receive it, they're always patient, they always know it's going to be an email and so forth. But on this one, there were so many people that were like 2 weeks later, hey, did you send my reading? And I'm like, yeah, I'll resend it. Like, just so many people that like overlooked it because a $33 investment it isn't a big deal to a lot of people, and they don't take it as serious. And so that's why, like, I like my prices being at a certain level because of the level of client that you're going to bring in. If you offer a service to anyone and it's free, like free estimates. I don't know how many contractors have they advertise free estimates. Do you know how many people waste their time on a weekly basis getting an estimate for something they're never going to get? And I've done it before. I was going to redo my bathroom and I got a free estimate. It was $20,000 for a closet size bathroom. And I was like, no, like I'm good. But that free estimate, a lot of people charge more on the back end because they're willing to give you this free estimate when I would rather them just give you a virtual quote, send me photos of your space, measure your space, and I'll render a online quote for you, a generalized online quote for you. But when I'm getting a quote for like 15,000, it's not even going to include materials. And at one point, I wanted to knock a wall out and widen the space and collapse a closet and make it like a big bathroom space. The difference between collapsing the closet and leaving the wall up was only at $1,200. So you're telling me knocking an entire wall down, moving the electrical plates, rewiring it, and putting a wall back up, you're telling me that only is a $1,200 difference. No. No, thank you. And like the amount of people that will ask you a million questions but have no intentions of supporting your business, I'm sure is a lot in the contracting world.
Well, I'm sure. And like, especially in the contracting world, because we see that on like a small scale with our business too. There's a reason that I started doing spiritual advice and guidance on my website. And it's because I was so tired of being asked questions for free all the time. I feel like, and we've discussed this before, but there's so much content that we put out on social media, doing group readings, whatever, having super discounted things on our Patreon. Like there's so much. The readings are discounted when you get them through Patreon, just everything. And then to just have like bombardment of additional questions about things. And I really want your time on this, and I want to trauma dump all this information and get your point of view, spiritual advice and guidance, because time is valuable, energy is valuable. If you want me to sit down and have this time to go through and energetically feel out all the information that you're giving me and give some type of guidance, I'm charging for that. And there are people sometimes, when I first started doing it, I had people that were like, wow, that's so rude. Because from the Coven of Rejects podcast, they're just like, when you're giving out advice like I do on that podcast, that's something that's happening for free. So then it's just expected that your time is just always going to be free. And then now that's different. Now I get people that are like, they either book it or, okay, well, I'm going to save up for that. And that'll be something that like I gift myself or that I ask for my birthday. And I always love that where someone's like, I'm going to budget that in and I'm going to do that instead of being like, well, I really don't have the money for that. And that's really expensive. Can you just give me a discount on it? Because
Yeah,
if spirit leads me to give you a discount, I will.
that's why on Patreon for all levels, I started doing just like monthly, like this past month, I gave them for the month of April. If you're on Patreon, you can get $50 off any service that's $100 or more. And I've had a lot of people who get monthly readings sign up for spell work or a Reiki cleanse or things that they don't normally get. And that's why. Like, I'm starting to change things around where there is a level where it just includes the group spell work. Like, it's just going to be the group spell work. Or if you want to upgrade and you want a reading, the group spell work and a personal spells, you have options for that. But, like, I understand not everybody can, like, spend a certain amount every month. So I like to make things, like, affordable. But when Bunny XO changed over her pay grade from, like, $5 to $10 and 15 to 25, and people were losing their shit. It really made me evaluate of like when you make yourself affordable to everyone. Like she's had this $5 level. I've been on it for almost 4 years, and I've never thought oh, she's doing not enough. I've always thought, damn, she's doing way too much. It's way too much for me to consume as a consumer for $5. I feel like the $5 is just like a support, and all this stuff is bonus. So when all of these people were just absolutely going crazy over the fact that she upgraded these levels to the point where now, like, her top levels, you're getting like presents and prizes and live Zoom calls and all these things. Like, it's like she's just went above and beyond. And the whole time I was thinking, and I know we talked about it, that she was doing way too much for $5. And you get people accustomed to having full access to you for $5, $10, $15, $20. They think they own you. And I understand, like, hers is a huge platform where, you know, if everyone's giving you $5, you're making $500,000 a month. Like, you know,
Right.
I understand that, but it's like the fact that people thought they were being taken advantage of because she was going to add a $10 and a $25 level really blew my mind. And it really made me realize how much I appreciate my monthly clients and my clients who just upgrade. They just pay what they pay and they get their services and they're happy and they're grateful and they're pleased and there's never any drama. But man, was that causing a ruckus on Patreon when she did that? And I just thought, like, these people are fucking nuts.
What I always think is interesting is once people get money, then if they charge for anything, if they raise a price on something, then they're just money hungry or whatever. And so it's interesting to me to have people who have been okay with paying the $5, literally watching her form that platform from nothing and create all of this, do all this content, grow and grow and grow to the point that now, like, there's so much that she's putting out there to just keep up with the rate of people. So she raises prices, and then now people are like, you know, she had comments like, oh, you're selling out, or you used to be for like the people who were broke or whatever, and now you're, you know, you think that you're too good for us or whatever. And that part to me is the part that for her specifically was really interesting to me, because she's always been about the people. She's always made things affordable. Her Patreon is still extremely affordable for the content that you're getting. And she also has a lot more people now who screen record her segments and who post things publicly for other people to see and take clippings off of, you know, episodes and things like that. And if there's something about her, she's going to make a fucking coin off of it. So if you're going to sit there and you're going to be screen recording her shit and you're going to be shit talking, she absolutely should be upping the price of the tiers so that you're having to pay some more money for that. And she is going to have energy vampires around her because she's such a light. It's like drawing moths to a flame sometimes. And I'm glad that she fucking is doing her thing and hustling through it and raising prices. And if people don't want to pay it, then they can go suck a rock.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was just like adding to the fact that, like, when people think, like, you know, I used to do readings for $15, $20, and like the amount of clients I would have was a bigger number, right? It was a bigger number of clients that are willing to pay $15 or $20. But when I raised my prices like a year ago, I will say that like the volume of customers went down, but the quality of customers went up because once again, every time I do a flash reading, there are people that are like, when are you going to do my reading? Oh my God, I know I booked it next Thursday, but it's Tuesday and I really would like my reading. Or, oh, I thought this was going to be a different type of reading. I thought this was a live segment. I was hoping that I was getting a video link. You know, like they're not reading the fine print because investing a smaller amount of money isn't triggering them to look at the fine print. But when someone's going to invest $111, they're reading it. They're reading it. They're making sure that it's a video reading. They're making sure that it's what they're expecting to receive. And I don't mind the questions. Like, you know, a lot of people end up apologizing or feeling upset, or, you know, like they feel bad for bothering me. And I don't mind answering questions. I just ask that people, before spending your money with anyone, not just me, anyone, that you know what you're paying for. Just like when we purchase Netflix and there's three levels. There's one that, everyone in your family can get on. There's one that's just for one household. There's one that's got some commercials. Pay attention to that, like you would with anything, whether you're going to get new tires and they give you three levels of tires, one's 500, one's 1,000, one's 1,500. Well, they all do the same thing, yes, but the $500 tires come with no warranty, no roadside, no nothing. The 1,500 ones are guaranteed for 3 years. Well, if you're a single mom and you're or a single person and money's tight, I would say always go with the middle because you're going to want some type of warranty. Because what's going to happen is you're going to pull up to your kid's daycare and get a nail in your tire 3 weeks after you bought them. And for those that didn't get the warranty, they're going to get on Facebook and perpetuate that negativity of this always happens to me. And every time I try to do something, this always happens to me. But that is the self-fulfilling prophecy that I learned about in psychology. A lot of people are so caught up in the story they tell themselves that they actually create it to be true. They actually create it and draw it closer to them. I gave a speech about this this past weekend. A lot of people hear about manifesting and the law of attraction, but they just disregard the law of assumption. And if you assume it's going to be hard, it's going to take all this time and energy and money and resources, and you don't have them, you're going to reject the opportunity for something amazing to happen.
100%. And people, I don't think that people pay enough attention to the fact that you also create realities based off of emotion. And just because you feel that it's a certain way doesn't mean that it is that way. And so there are a lot of people who think that they're doing self-reflection and that they're aware of the actions that they have and the way that they're influencing others around them. But they're really just acting on emotional responses and how it emotionally is making them feel, which usually transposes into others around them feeling taken advantage of or feeling like the person is a narcissist, which is why I think that a lot of people who get called narcissistic aren't true narcissists. They are just emotionally wanting gratification from things. And the only way that they can see the world is based off of how it's emotionally affecting them. And those are the people who will be the most insistent that they are self-aware, that they're on their healing journey, whatever. And you're like, do you not see the catastrophe that is like constantly around you? That's because of you.
Yeah, and unfortunately, when you grow up in like fight or flight mode, we develop a victim mindset. And I, as a child, developed a lot of like isolation tendencies, mainly because kids my age were not being exposed to what I was being exposed to. So not only did I think it was acceptable, I knew at some rate in my head that like I couldn't communicate to that level with everyone. Like, I couldn't just tell everyone, like, yeah, my mom lets me do this or my mom lets me do that, because then you've got that nosy parent that's gonna call CPS on her own accord or, whatever. So, hanging out with older kids or hanging out with people that were way more mature and like way more just not in that childlike stance, I knew as a kid, deep down subconsciously, that I couldn't hang out with other 12-year-olds when I was actually hanging out with 15-year-olds doing things I wasn't supposed to be doing, So I do think our environment feeds into it. And what I always like to encourage people is A, read that fine print, but B, stop projecting your limiting beliefs into new scenarios. It's just like that in relationships, which is probably the most relatable way. So many people will be in an abusive or toxic relationship. And instead of working through those insecurities and those fears and those traumas that have either been projected or absorbed, you then get into another relationship and then you love bomb or you trauma bond, or you attach to this new person and project those insecurities onto them and onto the relationship. I see things cycle around and they're like, if my partner doesn't want me to have Snapchat, I'm going to delete it. If my partner doesn't want me to do this, I'm going to listen. Okay, cool. respecting your partner is cool, but a lot of that is an isolation technique that narcissists use to isolate you from your daily interactions. So if they're going to abuse you physically, mentally, spiritually, they don't want you snapping. They don't want you snapping your friends every day because they're going to see the slow decline of your looks, your happiness, your aura, your, taking care of yourself. I've always seen people get in relationships and they used to model, or they used to get ready every day, or they always used to go out and have fun with their friends. And then they get into a relationship and that's non-existent. And then it's all fuck everybody. They don't reach out to me. I'm not reaching out to them. That's what that narcissist has put into your mind. Because a real friendship is 50-50, and sometimes it's 75-25 because this person's going through something, or they're going through postpartum or a divorce or a change in their life. And it's not all about you. They're not just laying up at night like, how can I piss Jessica off by not reaching out to her? That's not what they're doing. But people that want to isolate you and manipulate you will put these little, I don't know, little ideas in your head, and then you absorb them. So if you've absorbed those from your family and your friends growing up, it's going to be a lot of self-work and self-accountability to break through those barriers.
So there's an analogy that I've heard before that I always reference, and it's that bringing toxicity or bringing anything from an old relationship and bringing it into a new relationship is the exact same as you coming with a cup that has spoiled milk in it and then pouring fresh milk into it and expecting it to taste good. It's not going to, because regardless of how good and how pure and how fresh the new thing is, if you're coming with the old funky bullshit, it's going to make the entire thing taste bad no matter how much you're coming with it. And in regards to like friendships being like give and take and having different percentages, we even just with you and I, we even see that in our own friendship where like you're like, girl, I know you've been going through some shit and so you've been quiet. I just was like, is she mad at me? I know you weren't, but like it was just on my mind. And I read that and I was like, no, I could never be mad at you. Sometimes you're just like so focused on what you got going on in life. And to me, I think that sometimes people are quiet because they don't want to put their shit on somebody else. They're like, I'm figuring things out right now. And if we have a conversation about what's going on in my life, I'm going to tell you what's going on in my life. And that just feels like a lot. And there's not a need for me to like trauma dump or involve you in shit. And so I'm going to keep pushing with what I got going on. And the last thing that somebody needs is thinking that their friends are going to hold space for them when they're going to need space held for them. And then somebody going, oh, well, you haven't talked to me in 2 weeks, so it's fuck you because you don't want anything to do with me. And you're like, quite the opposite. I thought this was a safe space that I was just going to be able to return to when I, had the space and time.
A lot of people hold their friends to certain standards, but then get dog walked in their relationships. Like,
Fact.
oh, you're not reaching out to me. You're not inviting me. You don't care about me. But then you let your partner gaslight you and leave you behind. And, I've seen people, especially as of recently, like Mercury retrograde energy, like, I asked my partner to start doing this, and they're doing the opposite of that. Like, there's almost like this punishment give and take that people do in relationships where it's like, hey, this is really hurting me that you don't do this, or this is triggering me that you're not putting effort towards this. And instead of actually flipping the script into that direction, they gaslight you into thinking you're the problem or that they're already doing enough. Like, a lot of men have been taught, you are a provider, and all you have to do is go to work and provide. And then when you come home, you're like a child. You need to be waited on, and you need to be, your dinner better be prepared, and your clothes better be clean. But when your wife says, hey, can you take that trash out? I'm in the middle of cooking. They're like, I'm not doing that, or I don't want to do that, or they won't get up and do that. So now you've got your hands in raw meat, and you're trying to like cook. And now you've got to run outside and take the trash out. Like, there's just so many elements to it. But whenever that was the expectation, women were also at home getting a mental break for like 6 to 8 hours without children and men around. So yes, they were able to have self-care and they were able to have lunches with the girls or, sit in the front lawn and prune their roses or whatever it was. But now you expect a woman to go to work just as long as you and then come home and you are like a second job. No wonder so many women in this day and age are choosing not to get married or resent their partner because that mindset is literally so far off track of like where society is. Like, that's why I always encourage people like make space and get a house cleaner, have someone cut your grass. Like if you and your husband don't get any time together and then on your off day you're cleaning and he's cutting grass, make it apparent to fucking pay someone to do those things so that your off day is your off day. And okay, maybe you can't go to a nice steak dinner, but you can go to a sports bar and sit outside on the patio and have a drink and eat in peace without thinking, I'm so wore out from cleaning all day, or I'm so grumpy from being in the sun mowing the yard all day, whatever. So I don't know. I think a lot of people are looking for 50-50, but if you're not giving yourself 100, you're showing up fragmented and you're looking for someone to save you. I think both partners need to be giving 100 because 50-50, like I guess worked before, but for me, I give myself 110. And if someone else isn't coming in that same energy, it starts to irk me. And I've told men this before, so I'll say it again. I give everyone the benefit of the doubt. I understand life happens. You got a flat tire, you got in a car wreck, you changed jobs, you moved out and got a new place. Like, I understand that life stressors are constantly happening, and it does not matter how prepared you are. Sometimes it throws you for a loop. But what bothers me is when men use that as an excuse and an excuse to be shitty or to give you half or to give you 25%. And then they keep stringing you along, like promising you, oh, well, once I adjust to this job, it'll be different. Or once I get my car fixed, I'll come see you. Or once this happens, this magical thing's going to shift in my life. And it irks me to my core when people do that in relationships, especially people who don't have their life together out here pursuing new relationships. I'm going to tell all y'all right now, if you've just went through a breakup, a divorce, something that's traumatic, health changes, family changes, grief work, you need to be working on healing all of that because jumping out and getting a new distraction or getting a new partner or whatever isn't going to fix your issue. But so many people would rather not work on themselves and come over here and disrupt your happiness and disrupt your peace, or get a dog that they're going to rehome in 6 months, or get an animal they can't take care of. Like, that's the shit that bothers me the most. It's not when people fall short, because I'm very understanding. It's when you're constantly making excuses to give someone less than half of your full attention. But then the moment that they set a boundary and they're like, no, that's not going to work for me, you're back on Tinder or you're over here and got a whole new relationship going with someone else who isn't tired of your bullshit yet, someone else who isn't aware the game that you play. And I don't know how many people approach me knowing damn well they're not ready for what I have to offer. Like, if you can't even do half of what I'm doing for myself, then leave me the fuck alone.
I'm so glad that I'm not like in the dating scene on things because it really feels like it's the day and time when people just have so much access on their phones to like overstimulation to like, oh, well, I'm bored right this second and she's busy and she said that she had to work or whatever. I love a girl that's working, but I'm super lonely over here. So I'm gonna go back onto Tinder and I'm just gonna go, whatever. And oh, you see me on Tinder? Well, we never agreed that we were official or anything like that. And there are people, but see, my thing is that in the dating scene, you're just out here getting to see more people that are operating that way because you're talking to multiple different people for like short spurts of time. Where I think that a lot of people operate that way in everyday life. I think that people tell multiple people the same thing that they have going on. because they don't want to wait for their friend to text them back. So they're like, let me trauma dump on you. Let me say all these things over here. I think that there are lots of people who are different versions of themselves with multiple people and who portray themselves to be a bunch of different ways so that they can just get a bunch of different things out of them. And I don't really have much patience for that. And I say that like my circle here is really small where I live, and that's because I am incredibly picky about the type of person that I'm going to have around me, the type of friends that I'm going to have. I want to see how people move for an extended period of time before I give you any type of trust or whatever. I always hate the saying that like respect does like shouldn't be, what is it? Respect should be earned, because I think that you can instantly just like be a respectful person, respect somebody when you meet them. I think that trust is something that needs to be earned. I can still be respectful towards you and not fucking trust you worth a damn.
I agree with that statement. Honestly, I think a lot of people have no capacity to actually be in relationships or actually have solid friendships because they don't treat themselves with that same respect. And I noticed that as I've evolved as a human and as a person spiritually, I have attracted better friends where, me and Gemini did not talk for like 2 weeks. We had a lot of things change and a lot of things shifted, but there was a part of me that was like, oh, she's mad at me. She doesn't want to do the podcast anymore. But then the other part of me was like, no, I know she's really not mad at me. She has a lot going on. And there's been like an added human into their routine that, like, that's going to take time to adjust, especially when your daughter's like a little spitfire and is used to doing whatever the fuck she wants to do. So, like, that's that fear-based energy of like, everyone's mad at me. Everyone's doing something to personally hurt me or attack me that we're all taught. We are all
Yeah.
taught that. And I don't know why a lot of us have absorbed that from our childhood, but so many people take things personally. And I try to practice what I preach and use the four agreements, which is don't take nothing personally, don't take anyone's actions, words, or feelings towards you personally. Be responsible for your actions. Be responsible for your words. Be with impeccable with your word is one of the agreements. But if you know you're being impeccable with your word and you're being kind and you're showing up in the ways that you would, normally show up, then you can't take someone's energy or their whatever they got going on as personal towards you. I
Yeah.
started manifesting. And I don't mean this in a mean way, but I love all of my friends that have kids, and I love all of my friends that like have gotten married and done all these things. But in the last like 10 years of me not having a kid, not getting married, not doing all of those things, I have went to countless bridal showers, bachelorette parties, baby showers, first birthdays, all of these things, only to a couple years later not talk to this person at all. And I don't mean in a mean way of like I don't want to be invited, but I kind of don't want to be invited. Like, I don't want to take my Sunday or my Saturday and go spend time with a bunch of people I don't know, buy a $50 present, take that time away from me, away from things I have going to not be friends 2 years later or to not even talk 2 years later. And it's not even that we're not cool. It's just that now your life has evolved into this direction and I'm still your single friend who is in this direction. And, there was one friend of mine that in like 2 years, she graduated college, she got married. So she had a bachelorette party, a bridal shower, and the wedding. Then she instantly got pregnant. So she had a diaper reveal or a gender reveal and a baby shower. That was two things. And then the kid's first birthday. So within 2 years, I'd went to like 10 parties for this girl and bought a present every one of them. And here we are, the one kid is probably like seven, and the other one I've never even met. I think she's like five. And I don't like feel any ill intention. Like, we're cool. We're now like Facebook friends. We went from being very close, right-hand man friend to Facebook friends. And, we'll DM back and forth, like, we should get together. We should get together. And like, she hit me up one day and was like, what would you charge to do a party of readings? And I told her what I would charge. And That was it. Like, I think she thought I was going to come show up to this party just to be invited and charge $10 for a reading. Like, no, I'm not driving an hour away and reading for 10, 12 people that I don't even know and making less than I would for 1 hour session online.
Yeah.
I don't have to leave my house. You know, that's the thing is like, we don't ever talk, but then she wanted like that right-hand man discount kind of thing. And like, no hard feelings. I don't have any, but I think because she went on to a different path and is doing the mom and wife thing. She hangs out with people who are doing the mom and wife thing. So, you know, I don't hold grudges or take that personal, but I just learned that in the back of my mind, I don't really want to be invited. Like, I'll congratulate you and see you from afar and cheer you on, but I don't want to be invited. Like, unless we are like right hand close, I'm good. Like, I'm good. And then there's a part of your ego, though, that sees like the party happen or sees something happen and you didn't get invited. And you're like, damn, I didn't get invited. But I have to remember, like, that's what I want. I don't want to be invited. I want to cheer you on from the side, but like, congratulations on your baby. But I'm tired of buying $50 gifts in this economy for people that, like, I don't even see your baby. I don't even know your baby. There are friends that I make exceptions and I go to their kids' parties and I'm very involved with their kids. And I love kids, but it's like a lot of people just invite people to fill up the roster to get free shit, in my opinion.
You should invite people and give people a butt. Give people a butt out option. Like, hey, I'm going to be throwing a baby shower for this. I also know that you don't really have, kiddos or whatever, and you're always pretty busy. So if you're not able to make it, totally okay. No hard feelings. I just didn't want you to feel left out. That's like, those are the best invites. When you tell me I have the option to not come, I'm so grateful because chances are I see the preview of your text being like, hey, this is going on. And I'm like, yep, I'm washing my hair that day. Like, I do not want to put pants on. I'm definitely busy. So I'm just going to leave you undelivered because I certainly don't want to have to like reject you. Whereas if you've given me the out, even if I say, yeah, I'm going, I know that your feelings won't be hurt if I don't end up making it. I'm not a fan of going and fucking doing things, but I don't, unless you're like my sister, I don't want to go to your baby shower. I truly don't give a fuck. Like, people have babies every day. You're gonna get a shit ton of gifts. They're mostly gonna come from your parents, and there's gonna be a bunch of shit that you get that you're not gonna remember who gave it to you. Literally, there's usually somebody at a baby shower who is writing a list of what the gifts are and who they came from because they don't remember. I'm not gonna be stressed out over here because I went and bought you a gift and I had it budgeted for your baby shower. So now I spent $50 on something you don't even know is from me and you're never gonna use. And then you're gonna end up selling it on Facebook Marketplace in 5 years for half the fucking value. And it's new in the box. Like I'm just not interested in that. Yeah, no, thank you.
And I say that in the nicest way possible. Like, I genuinely support you from afar. And I say this like with love. I don't mean that in a rude way, but like, unless you would take a bullet for me, I'm not coming to your baby shower. Like, you know, like I support people. And another thing about baby showers that irks me, and I maybe have said this before, is you're only supposed to have one baby shower per gender. So you can't have a girl and then a year later have another girl and have another baby shower. It's actually tacky. And I think it's like a old wives' tale or something. You're only supposed to have one baby shower. Maybe it's superstitious. I don't know. But it's per gender. And only if the first and two babies are 5 years apart. Those are the rules. Don't shoot the messenger. But you all having this new thing where we have diaper parties, gender reveal parties, and baby showers for one child, and then you turn around a year or two later and do the same shit again. No, that's not it. Especially if you're getting three parties for one baby. No. No, thank you. And I think a lot of my friends just know that I don't want to come to their gender reveal. Like, I will just watch the live stream that your aunt streamed on Facebook, and at the end, I'll watch the pink or blue powder pop into the air. But I don't need to be there mainly because what I find is it is such an awkward experience because I show up to these parties and I only know the people that are having the child or the people that are in the main thing. And then I think honestly, As a person throwing a party, that would have to stress me out, knowing I invited a bunch of different people who don't know each other and they only know me. So then they try to seek, like, segue to talk to me, while meanwhile, simultaneously, everyone else is trying to segue to talk to me. That would stress me out. Like, I understand if you were in a sorority or a fraternity and you've got like some close-knit friend group that they're all friends and all your wives and partners hang out together. Okay, cool. But other than that, it's just awkward. It's awkward for the people you invite because we show up and we only know you. And, I'm not saying that buying a gift is a problem, but buying a multiple a year gift for multiple people, and I don't ever see you aside from me coming to these parties. No. No, thanks.
I feel that way about weddings. I don't, again, unless I'm really close with you, I don't want to go to your fucking wedding. I just don't. I don't know you guys like that. I have a bunch of people here that I don't know. I'm having to sit with them. I'm having to listen to really loud music. I'm barely even gonna talk to you. Everybody wants to talk to you. That's why, we didn't, for many reasons, we didn't do a big wedding like that. That's not a vibe to me. Also, this is just a personal pet peeve. I fucking hate when people send me out announcement cards. Send me out announcement cards and invite cards to shit. I genuinely am like, you don't have my address so that you can spam me with invites to things and save the dates for everything. There are multiple people inside of my world, cousins that I haven't fucking talked to, and I don't know how, they probably got my address from my mom, that send me updates on their life and shit. I have an aunt who sends out emails every year about what the family has done throughout the year. I don't give a fuck. Stop sending me your shit.
One thing I do think that people need to do more of is, if you are going to save the date and send a shit ton of invites, send thank you cards out then. Because if you can do all that, then you need to send thank you cards. That's normally why someone's setting up the baby shower or the wedding shower, writing everything down, is so that someone can send thank you cards. But like, my cousin had three kids back to back. Like, she had a kid and then she had twins, and she would not send anything out. And that just irked me. It just irked me. If I'm driving 45 minutes to come to your fucking baby shower and bringing presents for not one baby, but two babies, and you really weren't supposed to have a second baby shower, but she couldn't handle the first kid. So what was going to make her think she could handle two more? And no thank you cards. And even my grandmother mentioned that, but now she's in a much better mental place and she's doing a lot better and she's a lot more grateful now. But I just personally am irked by the fact that you had my address to invite me, but then when it came down to thanking me for the gift, crickets.
Crickets. Are you ready for a human design card?
Yes.
All right. I pulled card 47, which is the chameleon. This is the photo. All right. The sign is Virgo. The gift is versatility, and the shadow is bondage. At the higher frequency of this gift, your fears lose their devilish grins and you see them for what they are, symbols. Every symbol in your reality has an underlying meaning, and with every meaning, a message. It is your mission to decipher the writings of your walls. From here, you gain access to all of life's mysteries. You release yourself from the handcuffs and self-imposed limitation, a fixed identity, a label, a career path, and an image. You are nothing, and you are no thing and no one. You are everything, the sunset and the chameleon. The collective unconscious slips into each individuated experience, coloring aspects of your lifetime in such a way that reflects our greatest and deepest fears. As unique beings within the larger whole, we each grapple with our own distinct, prominent shadows. And the more we attempt to deny or repress them, the more they loom in our peripheral. What occurs in your outer world is an extension of your inner landscape. What demons are you holding hostage? Witness them, hold the chains, and set your devils free. Making peace with your humanness, complete with its afflictions and darkness, is the only route to salvation. Your themes are spaciousness, fluidity, dynamism and symbols.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
We are so grateful for you all. Thank you for joining us at Candyland, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.